Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So yesterday we talked a little bit about Georgia, the upcoming season, what we feel like we already know, the areas in which I'm looking to see some improvement from UGA, individual players in particular, for Georgia kind of break through that ceiling, win the national championship. And I wanted to follow up on that today this way. One of the things I counted as a given yesterday when I spoke about this on our show, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, is the offensive line. I've said that there's a track record in place here. You've had multiple names kind of cycling through the program, but over the last 3 years, Georgia's had a very good offensive line. Therefore, when I'm thinking about what I think I already know about Georgia this season, no Andrew Thomas, no Isaiah Wilson, significantly also no Sam Pittman as the offensive line coach anymore, no Solomon Kinley, and yet I still feel pretty good at saying somehow, even if I can't predict fully and completely and confidently the five Georgia starters, I believe that Georgia's offensive line will eventually prove to be in good hands. More in a moment on what some former Georgia players are saying on that very same topic. However, it's fair to point out that not everyone apparently agrees with me on this, and this becomes kind of a nice jumping on point for our discussion here today. There's a guy named Barrett Salee, writer for CBSSports.com, who historically has been fairly high on Georgia. Picked Georgia to make the playoffs multiple times over the last couple of years. Touted Georgia good bit going into last season as well. And yet in a piece that I read at CBSSports.com this morning, Barrett's got in the SEC East this year, Georgia second, he says. 10-2 is the mark that he thinks that Georgia achieves. Florida, he says, goes 11-1, wins the division over Georgia. And one of the reasons that Barrett cites for why Georgia doesn't beat Florida this year, doesn't win the SEC East, is the remade Georgia offensive line. Now, I don't agree with Barrett on this for some reasons that I'll get to, but it is at least fair to point out. When we have Connor Riley, one of our Dog Nation reporters, here on the show in a couple of minutes, I'm going to talk more about this to him, that the mistake that I don't want to make with the Georgia offensive line this year is the mistake that I made with the Georgia wide receiving core a year ago, where you had math guys, analytically minded analysts, smart dudes who were saying statistically it's going to be tough for Georgia along the wide receiving core because they've got so little production returning in 2019 compared to what was on the team in 2018. I read those posts. I heard those takes. And my response was always, it's not going to be that big of a deal because of the overwhelming level of talent that position group has, whether it be four-star guys that George had signed in previous classes or George Pickens, Dominic Blaylock coming in as very highly regarded freshmen. The truth is, as you know, Blaylock and Pickens played over the moon from what you would typically expect from incoming freshmen, and yet that still wasn't enough to propel the position group overall. Come to find out, the naysayers about the wide receiver position for Georgia before last season ended up kind of being right about that. So you at least have to consider this for the Georgia offensive line. However, ultimately, though, I think one of the things that makes the preseason evaluation of this year's offensive line different than last year's wide receiving core is there just a more firm track record established for the offensive line. I don't know that this line played great a year ago. It probably did from a pass protection standpoint, may have left something to be desired from its ability to open up holes in the running game, but it was at least very good the same way it was in 2017. In 2018, Georgia probably had a truly great offensive line. That's a pretty significant track record. You can sort of expect something from the position group, even if you don't know right now with certainty the names of all the starters. The truth is, for the Georgia wide receiving situation, it's almost like the exact opposite has been true. The track record of the position group itself is just a little bit erratic for Georgia. You've had some individual guys like Pickens do really well. Blaylock had a pretty good year. Javon Wims did very well for Georgia, I'd say, in the second half of 2017. But even kind of predating Kirby Smart, there's just not been a ton of certainty about what you're getting from the wide receiver position at Georgia because over the course of years, once again, even predating the current coach, that was a position group that Georgia just didn't always recruit as well as it did some other positions. So last year, I probably didn't heed the warning of experts who said, hey, be careful with that wide receiver core. This year, at least a guy who, gives an opinion at CBSSports.com says, take a look at that Georgia offensive line. That could cost them a game, could turn what you hope is 12-0, 11-1 into 10-2. However, I feel like you've got better legs to stand on as a Georgia fan to say, listen, I've been around the block of this Georgia offensive line before. Even if Andrew Thomas is gone, even if Isaiah Wilson is gone, even if Solomon Kinley is gone, you still feel okay that the new coach, Matt Luke's going to find a way to replace some of those guys. In fact, one of the names I just mentioned, Isaiah Wilson, was with us for a Dog Nation Appreciation video the other day, and we asked him at the time about the offensive line of the upcoming season. What do you expect from his positions there at the offensive tackle? What does he expect from the group overall? And Wilson said, listen, there's a lot of names in that group that you may not, you know, the casual fan may not know a ton about yet, who really could be about to burst onto the scene. Here's what Isaiah Wilson said then.
I honestly don't even like to focus on the tackles. The O-line is just one big family of bears. So I honestly think it's still going to be OLU. There's a lot of experience on there, even though it seems young on paper. Trey Hill has played a lot of football at center in the SEC as a young guy. Jamari Sawyer is extremely talented. He made me better every day in practice because I knew he was behind me and waiting for me to kind of slip up. So he's extremely talented, very consistent, is a very good player, has great technique. Warren Erickson, Xavier Truss, Warren McClendon. There's just a lot of talent on that O-line. Even with guys coming in like Tate Ratledge and other people coming in, there's a lot of talent on that O-line, and I think they're don't rebuild, we reload. That holds very true here.
We don't rebuild, we reload. That's what Isaiah Wilson says, and he'd know. As he said before, Jamari Sawyer was playing behind him at practice in previous years, and guys that he mentions like Xavier Truss, Warren McClendon, guys we haven't been able to see with our own eyes quite as much yet. Once again, these are guys that Wilson would know very well, and it sounds like that he's quite confident in their ability to kind of step into some bigger shoes for this upcoming season. We've cautioned this a lot when it comes to the Georgia roster right now. The one thing that you cannot assume is just because someone isn't playing, that means somehow he's disappointing as a prospect, somehow on his way to not being what we thought he could be coming out of high school. This is a very deep Georgia roster right now, and it's hard to work your way onto the field to be a contributing offensive lineman. There are guys waiting in the wings, waiting to prevent that from happening. We'll hear from Sam Pittman on that on our show here coming up in just a moment, that same topic. So we haven't seen the McClendon yet. We haven't seen the Xavier Trusses yet. We haven't seen the Clay Webbs yet. But we've seen a little bit of Warren Erickson now from the Sugar Bowl, but even him we haven't seen a lot of. And yet Isaiah Wilson says, I've seen those guys. Trust me, when you do get a chance to see more of them, he thinks we'll like what we see, and I'm going to take Wilson's word on that. But in addition to contributing offensive linemen, you also have to have that top-end performer as well. The way that Isaiah Wynn once was in 2017, the way that Andrew Thomas became, the way that Isaiah Wilson has become. You've got to have those bedrock offensive linemen. And for Georgia in 2020, one of the potential problems is what seems to be on paper the most likely to be that bedrock offensive lineman is a name that you heard Wilson mention a moment ago. Jamari Sawyer, a guy who hasn't played a ton and in 2020 is likely to be playing outside of the position we expected him to play. He may be Georgia's left tackle, whereas he was probably recruited to be an interior offensive lineman. However, a guy that knows Sawyer well, going back to his time as a high school teammate of Jamari's there at Pace Academy, is Andrew Thomas. Thomas also joined us on a Dog Nation appreciation video not all that long ago. And in terms of his former high school teammate and his former Georgia teammate, you're probably not surprised to know that Andrew Thomas has very high expectations for what Jamari Sawyer brings to the Georgia offensive line here in 2020.
A new face, Jamari Sawyer, our offense, I think, is going to be new. A lot of guys, expected him to play really early. Things happen, but he's going to be a great player. He's kept his head up. He's going to continue to fight. And I think he's going to, be the anchor on the offensive line.
Listen, I think that what Thomas says there shouldn't get glossed over. In normal circumstances, Jamari Sawyer probably would have already been playing at Georgia, doing, big things for UGA. But getting on the field early for him, especially given the fact that he was a summer enrollee in the year which he arrived at UGA, just made that more difficult. But Jamari's not off schedule in terms of being one of this program's most important offensive linemen. I'm thinking back to a photo. Do you remember this, for those of you that have followed UGA recruiting closely? before National Signing Day in 2017, and there was a picture of a lot of the linemen that Georgia was about to sign, notably Andrew Thomas, and they're all sitting together on a recruiting visit, and there was like a chair open for someone else to join them. And it was widely assumed by many that the chair was being left for Isaiah Wilson, who would eventually pledge to Georgia, choosing the Dogs over some of the really big programs in all of college football. And it made sense that open seat at the recruiting table, so to speak, belonged to Isaiah Wilson. But the legend has it that the photo was actually open chair left for Jamari Salyer, who would join Georgia the following year in the class of 2018. That's how much guys thought of Salyer way back then, even when he was still just a high school junior. That's the reputation that he has. And now this is, in a lot of ways, his offensive line. And being as good as Andrew Thomas, being as good as Isaiah Wilson, being as good as Isaiah Wynn once was in the Kirby Smart era, those are not easy things to do. But over the course of a multitude of years, Georgia has produced a quality offensive line. And the departure of Sam Pittman and the guys that leave this past draft class for their home in the NFL, that's not enough for me to say the Georgia offensive line suffers in their absence. It is maybe not quite as simple as Isaiah Wilson says, reloading instead of rebuilding, but there are plenty of options for Georgia to build itself a quality, capable offensive line. And my prediction for 2020 is that's exactly what UGA will do. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thanks for being with us, and a huge thanks to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making it all possible. You know, divorce is just sort of an unfortunate, you know, reality in life. You don't want to talk about it, but statistically speaking, a lot of the people who are listening right now at some point in time either have dealt with this or will find themselves dealing with that in the future. And boy, there's not a lot I can do to make that not be true, but if you find for you it is true, then the thing you got to have is an advocate on your side, because for the important issues like your finances and the relationship you have with your children, things like that, the whole scenario right now may be too cloudy for you to see all that clearly, but there are solutions to those problems, and my friends at Meriwether and Tharp can help provide those solutions for you. So I advise you to reach out to them, theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's the website, theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp. And by the way, it'll also give you access to a ton of free resources from them, blog posts, podcasts, things like that. Educate yourself about the process and also set yourself up to ask better questions when you have the first consultation. You know, they're going to take a lot of steps for you along the way to help you rebuild your life, make yourself whole again. But the first step belongs to you. Reach out to my friends at Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. All right, coming up in just a moment here, I want to get Connor Riley. We're going to talk more about this topic and kind of get into his thoughts about not just where the Georgia offensive line goes from here, but also those names I mentioned yesterday of guys who I sort of think of as the swing players for Georgia for the upcoming season. But the offensive line is a big part of this. And, you know, I mentioned before about the fact that you've got a lot of guys at Georgia waiting in the wings to be on the field this year. I thought the Athens Banner-Herald had an interesting story the other day, quoting Sam Pittman, former Georgia offensive line coach, echoing something pretty similar to what I said a moment ago. He says, of the guys getting their chance here in 2020, he says, it's hard to beat those guys out. Yet you can be really close to those guys, but just not get as much playing time. He mentions Jamari Salyer playing quite a bit more this year than he had in the past. Sam Pittman goes on to say he played a lot of ball. To look at him, you're going, man, he's probably not a tackle, but he is a tackle, and he's going to be a really good player. He's kind of a natural pass protector. Pretty interesting there on that. He goes on to praise some of the other offensive linemen. Mentions Xavier Truss as a kid that's got a lot of talent. He talks about Clay Webb. Touts Trey Hill coming back there at the center position. I'll put a link to this when I post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. But Sam Pittman apparently feels pretty good about some of these guys, you know, sort of stepping into that forefront. And I think between the three guys you know well, Ben Cleveland returning after not playing in the Sugar Bowl, Trey Hill, who I think is probably a little bit more of an anchor at the center position than sometimes he's given credit for, and Jamari Salyer, who may be this unit's most spectacular name, I think there's a lot to like about this group right now, and it's a group that I've grown to trust. It's not a perfect scenario to have a new offensive line coach and so many new names, But as Pittman says there, there's plenty of names there that you can feel competent in building something, an offensive line around. I can promise you this. A lot of programs in the SEC, including some would-be contenders, wish they could feel as good about their offensive line going into the start of the season as Georgia's able to do. So we'll talk more about that with Connor Riley. It's good to have you with us here. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let me bring in Connor Riley from DogNation.com. Connor, do you think I'm speaking too soon in assuming that the Georgia offensive line has got a track record that makes it trustworthy?
I think the Georgia offensive line is still going to be good. It's still going to be competent. But you also, you don't get better or you don't experience, you don't not experience some drop off when you lose a 3-year starter in Andrew Thomas and a 2-year guy in Isaiah Wilson, and go along with Solomon Kinley as well. Now, they do have some guys that have played. They have some guys who have some nice upside that have not played a whole lot. Jamari Sire really comes to mind there. I think Trey Hill is only going to continue to get better as a center, and they're bringing in some young talent. I think Broderick Jones is a guy who in normal circumstances would be someone we'd be talking a lot more about, but I think given the current situation, I do wonder he might be given he has to put on weight at the next level. I think he's someone who, if there's an interruption of summer workouts and he's maybe, you know, arriving to campus a little bit later than he usually would, I think he's probably a guy who's most impacted by all of this. But the Georgia offensive line is still going to be very good. Justin Schaefer has played a significant amount of football. Ben Cleveland has played a significant amount of football. And then you have guys like Warren Erickson and Jamari Sawyer, who when they played against Baylor, the best defense in the Big 12 a year ago, they played pretty well for the most part. So while the Georgia offensive line, it's not going to be the best part of the team this year, like it maybe was perhaps for the offense last year, I think in the long run, that might actually be okay because you're going to need some other parts of this offense to step up anyway in 2020.
Yeah, when I say the Georgia offensive line is going to be fine, let me tell you what I hope that I'm not doing. I hope I'm not making the same mistake that I made a year ago, and I've admitted this, that when I looked at like the math guys and some of the more statistically minded college football analysts who were saying that Georgia's lack of returning production at wide receiver had the potential to be a really big problem, my essential response to that is, I hear what you're saying and I see your numbers, but what you don't realize is the overwhelming amount of talent that Georgia has is going to prevent that from being a problem. In retrospect, that was a mistake to think that inexperienced talent could basically prevent something that had been a problem for so many other teams for also being a problem for Georgia. The results spoke for themselves. Georgia was very much in line with other teams who've had that little returning production at wide receiver. I underestimated the degree to which that could be a problem for UGA. I don't think I'm doing the same thing, though, when I talk about the Georgia offensive line for one simple reason. Ultimately, what hurt Georgia last year with its wide receivers was not so much a lack of production from 2018 returning as it was a lack of track record after year after year after year. The Georgia wide receiver core has been a little bit of a, even with some names we all know and love, has been a little bit of an uneven group now, even predating Kirby Smart. It's just been uneven what you expect to get from that group. Whereas I think the performance of the Georgia offensive line now going back at least 3 years is solid enough that you can make a projection about the position group and the individual positions, even if right now I don't feel confident in being able to name all five of the starters there. I at least know what I get from left guard. I at least know what I get from right guard. I at least know what I get from one of the tackle spots because there's now a track record in place for that position group. Does that distinction make a difference to you, and does it make sense?
Yeah, I think it does. I think looking back, and this is probably something we should have harped on maybe a little bit more a year ago, Georgia had not recruited the wide receiver position all that well. Right. And I think we let the additions of George Pickens and Dominic Blaylock, who are the best wide receivers Georgia had recruited in essentially a decade, sort of blind us, cloud our judgment a little bit, that the reality was they had not recruited and developed that position as well as they had year over year. Whereas the offensive line, I think bar none to this point in Kirby Smart's tenure, has not only been the most consistent position group in his tenure, but the best recruited position group. You have multiple five stars in every class. You have guys like Clay Webb, who isn't even really expected to play a whole lot this year, but he's a guy who would play, I think, for a lot of college football programs, a place like Auburn, a place like Florida that need more offensive line help. I think that's, you know, an example of this guy's going to struggle to just get on the field here at Georgia this year. And that should give you some belief that Georgia is going to be okay. I think if there's one concern question, it's going to be who fills in at that tackle spot opposite Jamari Sawyer. I think you and I both feel comfortable, whether it be at the right tackle spot or the left tackle spot, as Solomon Kinley told us last week with Sawyer. It's who is that guy that fills in opposite him? Is it Broderick Jones? Is it Warren McClendon? Is it Xavier Truss? Guys who, you know, we've had different Georgia offensive linemen all speak highly of, but until we sort of see them on the field, that's the biggest question mark with this position group right now.
Let me make one more point about the offensive line, then we'll move on and kind of talk about something else for a moment. You know, I want to be careful how I say this, but when I look at the last 3 years for Georgia, 2017, 18, and 19, the only one of those 3 years in which I thought Georgia had an undisputably great offensive line was 2018. The 2017 offensive line was good enough. The 2019 offensive line was good enough. The 2019 offensive line I thought was elite from a pass protection standpoint. But frankly, and I want to be very careful how I say this because I don't want to disparage the guys, but it's not that hard to match what the 2019 offensive line did for Georgia from a run game standpoint, opening up holes in the running game. This offensive line a year ago simply was not great at that. Now, you may say there were some mitigating factors, predictable play calling, things like that. You're probably right to say that. However, I'm not asking the 2020 offensive line to be the greatest offensive line in the history of college football. I'm asking them to match what previous Georgia offensive lines have done. And from a run game standpoint last year, it may not be quite as hard to match that feat as some people might think it is.
Right. And I think the big difference from 2018 and 2019 is just I don't necessarily think everyone appreciated how good Lamont Galliard was, especially at getting to the next level and sort of opening things up there. And because last year was Trey Hill's first time ever in high school or in college as playing starting center. And I do think there were some growing pains there with him. Now he's played more football there at that spot. He's certainly more comfortable at that center spot going into this year. But, and again, I think the other thing is, you know, you probably feel maybe a little bit better about the wide receiver position this year than you did a year ago. Well, you don't have a DeAndre Swift back there at running back. The depth is still good. So I actually think, you know, even if the offensive line does take a step back just from great to good, I think there's perhaps enough talent around Georgia to where that difference isn't all that much noticeable.
Hey, I want to take a quick moment to shout out my friends at the UGA Alumni Association, the great work they're doing right now, facilitating the kind of money necessary to continue to make UGA really one of the shining institutions in all of higher learning. You know, there's a lot of ways which you can support what's happening at UGA right now, and I'll make sure that you're aware of all of that, whether it be the Student Emergency Fund. Let's face it, for a lot of students right now, displaced, not able to be on campus, going back to their hometowns, living with their families again, a lot of those students kind of find themselves in very unusual situations, whether it be because of a loss of job for the family that takes care of them, or uncertain health situation because of what we're battling with the COVID-19 virus right now. Well, the Student Emergency Fund is put in place for moments just like this, and your support of the Student Emergency Fund gets right into the hands of UGA students who just need a little bit of help from time to time, a little bit of a pick-me-up, sort of keep them on the educational track. We're all made better when students like this get their UGA degree. Your contribution to the Student Emergency Fund enables that to continue to happen, and these students will eventually go out and change the world they're going to be a part of. You can also support the research being done by UGA scientists as we seek a vaccine or a therapeutic for COVID-19. Great work is being done at the University of Georgia. In fact, you may have actually read about some of the breakthroughs recently that have occurred there at UGA. Well, this kind of research, these kinds of advancements don't happen without money. Your donation makes all that possible there as well. Also, for students about to graduate, they find themselves entering into a job market that's pretty tenuous right now, and it's very uncertain. When you step up to be a mentor, you help guide them through that phase and help them get on their feet to begin life in the sort of as a post UGA grad, a very important thing to be able to do. Plus, so many of you are on the front lines, you're on your own way, battling against COVID-19. The UGA Alumni Association would love to be able to hear your story on that there as well. So let me give you a website to go to. I'll see it a couple times, although for those of you on video, it's easier to read on the screen. It's alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. Once again, that's alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. All right, Connor, let me bring you in on the conversation we had yesterday. And I want to try to sum this up really quickly because I want to get a response from you. So what I stipulated yesterday was good offensive line, really good freshmen and sophomores. LSU is the perfect example of this. Some of their truly elite players a year ago are not draft eligible for 2020. Jamar Chase, Garrett Stingley, guys like that. The other stipulation that I made is I think that Georgia already has four players likely to be taken in the first three rounds of the 2021 draft. Newman the quarterback, three defensive backs, Stokes, Campbell, and Richard LeCount, if Campbell were to choose to leave. I believe that those four guys can be top three round picks. And when you see LSU this past year, 10 players selected in the first three rounds for the reigning national champion. That means that Georgia's got to find some other draft eligible guys for the upcoming season to really break through, to really step up. I'm not asking anybody to be, you know, College Football Hall of Famer, just a better statistical performance. The five names I gave our audience yesterday, two guys on offense, Zamir White, Demetrius Robertson, three guys on defense, Jermaine Johnson, Azeez Ojulari, and Jordan Davis, the defensive tackle. If those guys take not dramatic improvements, I'm not asking Jermaine Johnson to be Chase Young, but as I said before, could he give Georgia what LSU got from Clavon Chasen? I'm not asking Azeez Ojulari to be Chase Young either, but could he be as good as Yader Gross-Matos was for Penn State? 9.5 sacks, for instance. I'm asking for incremental improvement from these guys. That's my five. How does that land with you?
I think those names all make sense. If I could add in a few other names here and there, I think on the offensive side of the ball, I think Trey McKitty could be an interesting guy. You know, you saw what LSU got out of LSU has not been known as a tight end factory. I largely think outside of Penn State and Notre Dame, tight end factories at the college level don't really exist. But LSU got a lot out of Thaddeus Moss a season ago, and that did, I think, help unlock part of their offense and sort of take guys away from the outsides of the field where Chase, Terrence Marshall were sort of able to thrive. And I think if Trey McKitty is able to do that and have success at Georgia this year, again, he has a body type that Georgia just has not traditionally had at that tight end position. He's perhaps a little bit more athletic than both Charlie Warner and Isaac Nauta were at that tight end spot. And I think if Georgia is able to get something out of him and make him into a productive player, maybe not a top three round draft pick, but a fourth, fifth rounder, I certainly think that helps open things up there.
Before you mention another player, let me respond to McKitty, because I want to hear the rest of your guys. Let me respond to McKitty. I think there's something very interesting about him. And I'm not saying that he's going to be as good for Georgia as Lawrence Cager was a year ago, but there's an element of McKitty that reminds me of Cager. When you look at Lawrence, there were a lot of people who said at Miami, well, you got to understand, here was a guy that had some, I guess, drops problems. You know, there was kind of an uneven evaluation of Cager's time at Miami, and yet there were certain stats where you said, wow, one thing's pretty sure. He's catching touchdowns. He's pretty active, involved in that offense. For a team that wasn't great, Cager seemed to kind of assert himself. I think there's a very similar thing with McKitty here as well. Florida State was a mess and has been now for a couple of years. And we've had guys that know the situation in Tallahassee on this show. And they've kind of offered also kind of a, well, there's a good side and a bad side when it comes to McKitty there at Florida State. And yet a little bit of a deeper look at the numbers suggests this was a guy involved in that offense. So I think comparing him to Thaddeus Moss is interesting. But also kind of looking at the fact that on a bad team that didn't have a lot going for it, Trey McKitty found a way to get himself used in that offense, and that's at least worth consideration if you're a UGA fan.
Right, and the situation he steps into at Georgia, there's infinitely more stability here than there has been in his time at Florida State, and I think that might allow him to sort of just focus on just the aspects of playing football and doing the best he can this season, whereas – you know, and in past years, he's maybe worried about coaching turnover. What's my spot going to be like here with the new coaching staff coming in? And where's my sort of stability within this program? Whereas I think at Georgia, he actually gets that. As far as some other guys, I 100% agree on Azeez Ojulari. I'm going to have probably something this weekend on guys who could sort of be that like Andrew Thomas type player, a guy who, you know, obviously Azeez redshirted, but a guy who makes strong contributions as a freshman and just gets better every year. And while he might not be the best athlete in the world, he's someone who's just a very solid football player, and that should attract NFL teams. And I think Azeez is certainly going to be that. Whether it's whether he chooses to leave out of this 2021 for the 2021 draft or even the 2022 draft, I think that'll be worth watching. And I could also see, before I mention my other guy, I could also see DJ Daniel as a second, third round pick. I don't think he's going to test as well athletically as Stokes and Campbell, but he's going to be, I think, a very good player for Georgia.
His straight line speed should be really good, though,
yes,
right?
I think so. How does Monty Rice not get mentioned? He is I believe this is his third year as a starter, or is it third year as a big-time contributor. He, you know, you're not asking him to be Roquan Smith, but I still think he's going to be a very good player for this Georgia defense, a very solid player. And, you know, playing next to a guy like N'Kobe Dean, who can do a lot of the athleticism things, I think that could really make Monty Rice a really, really good player for the Georgia defense this year.
So Mike Griffith, when he was with us yesterday, also mentioned Monty Rice, and it could be that I'm just in error by omitting Monty. Let me try to explain kind of what my thought process was. First of all, five is a better number than six. It just sort of sounds better.
We both write headlines for a living.
Right. So there's partially that, but even beyond that, I like what Monty does for Georgia already. I think of Monty as an elite run stopper. The same way that I think of Jordan Davis as like the version of that, the defensive line, the guy kind of right behind him. You know how like in baseball they say you want to be strong up the middle, catcher, shortstop, second baseman, center fielder. You know, Georgia's sort of strong up the middle with Davis and then Monty Rice kind of lining up behind him. So it's not like I'm looking for a huge statistical improvement from Monty because I sort of already like what he does. Now, does Monty Rice go in the first three rounds because of that? Maybe he does. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit for saying that. I'll certainly acknowledge that. But the reason why I include a guy like Davis where I don't include a guy like Monty, and this may not be the sound reasoning, it's just my own personal reasoning. I said yesterday that I don't expect Jordan Davis to be Derrick Brown. I think they're very different kinds of players.
Yeah.
But coming out of high school, Jordan Davis' recruiting profile is not wildly different than Javon Kinlaw's was. You know, and I'm not expecting Jordan Davis to sack quarterbacks as well as Kinlaw did at South Carolina, although Davis did have 2.5 a year ago, probably more than some people realize. But my question on Jordan Davis was, is there a chance that he has a similar tackle for loss number to what Kinlaw showed the ability to do at South Carolina? I think that Georgia's been woefully inadequate in terms of producing tackles for loss anyway. I think that Davis is one of those guys, hopefully in really good shape, hopefully ready to show off an additional level of athleticism where he's already great as a run-stop defensive lineman. In the SEC, you have to have that. But there's this statistical threshold that he could also sort of break through where all of a sudden this guy's making tackles behind the line of scrimmage a little bit more. That's my reason for choosing Davis over Rice. It may not be the soundest of reasons, but it is my reason.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the reason – the thing Davis does best is he just – he literally clogs up the middle. He is the swab of hair that is clogging up your drain, that is filling up bathtub. And Georgia is just – with the way they use their defensive linemen, other than Tyler Clark last year really, they traditionally have not had their defensive linemen just say, hey, I know we preach gap integrity football, but just go make a play. They just have not really done that with the defensive linemen. And I actually think in this upcoming season, if there's going to be a guy to do that, it wouldn't necessarily be Davis because he allows guys like Monty Rice and guys like potentially N'Kobe Dean to go make those plays. I think if it's a defensive lineman, it's Trayvon Walker, just because I think like Davis, he does have that unique size and athleticism, but he plays perhaps a spot where he's asked to do a little bit less in terms of holding his ground and be put in a potentially better playmaking spot for Georgia. Oh,
before we go, I want to ask about the column you wrote this morning. Any other players you want to mention before we get there?
No, I think we pretty much hit on the guys that we all mentioned. You know, I'll be really interested to see what we get out of Demetrius Robertson this year. You know, it's one of those things. I largely kind of think he is what he is at this point. He's a solid player, but I don't think he'll also ever live up to being that, you know, five-star wide receiver that we all thought he was, you know, as a high school recruit and then when he ultimately transferred into Georgia.
Okay, so let's mention D-Rob for a moment, and then I promise we'll move on. So here's what I said about D-Rob yesterday. I'm not asking him to be Jerry Jeudy, but could he be Henry Ruggs? Henry Ruggs was 757 yards a year ago and 7 touchdowns. Now, Ruggs has also been 700-plus 2 years in a row at Alabama, so he's clearly more comfortable and a part of the Bama offense than Robertson has been at UGA. But Robertson had 700-plus receiving yards in his freshman year at Cal, different conference, different offense, totally understand that. Robertson also caught 3 touchdowns a year ago, so it's not like he hasn't found the end zone in his Georgia career. Is it asking too much in an offense that's going to include Pickens and Blaylock and at least one major freshman contributor? Could Demetrius Robertson have 700-plus receiving yards and at least more touchdowns than he had this past year?
No, I don't think so. And if he does, I think we're doing backflips because I do think that means, you know, Pickens is having a greater statistical season. I think you're seeing nice things out of Blaylock and freshman wide receiver X. And at this point in the show, I feel obligated to give the commenters their Matt Landers, Tommy Bush, Kyaris Jackson mentions as well.
Sure,
but with D-Rob, you know, to steal the Michael Jordan phrase, I mean, this is his last dance. It's his last year at Georgia, and there's been a ton of hype and a ton of talk around him. And, you know, while he has done some positive things before, I still think the thing with him is, you know, he's always seems like a guy who's had like an injury or two, and that has been a reason he's been slowed down for whatever reason. And if he can just, I think, you know, sort of like McKitty, know, he's really got stability now in sort of knowing what he is and what he's going to be. And I think that might potentially free him up to make a few more plays for the Georgia passing offense this year.
Last thing before we let you go, you wrote this morning at DogNation.com about what Kirby Smart's on the Paul Feinbaum show. I agree with your premise that, you know, I do think we're seeing a greater gap starting to grow in terms of what Sun Belt teams are doing, not the Sun Belt Conference, but teams kind of in this part of the country, SEC teams, in terms of, I mean, the NFL draft just accentuates this even more. There's just a huge gap talent-wise right now in college football, and it may only expand as time goes on. But let me also bring you on the other part of this when it comes to Kirby doing what I believe was, you know, a sort of a veiled shot in the direction of Dabo Swinney and Clemson. I think all is fair in this regard. And I hope people understand this, that as a UGA fan, I'm not incapable of showing respect for UGA rivals. I've actually got respect for what Dabo and Clemson have done, not only winning games in the field, but Dabo's created a substantial brand, you know, the kind of program that's a little bit more fun-loving, that's a little bit more family-oriented seemingly than, like, say, what an Alabama program is. And I think that you've got to do everything you can to take that brand down a peg if you're a program like Georgia. So kind of accusing them of being soft or accusing them of wanting to feast on soft competition, I just think is fair if you're trying to sort of distinguish yourself in comparison to Clemson. You know, on the full scale of things, what did you make of what Smart said Friday in the Feinbaum show?
Yeah, I certainly think it was directed at Clemson. I think that's a team, especially when you look at schools that are having the most success in the Atlanta area, which I think Kirby Smart has made a bigger part of the Georgia recruiting machine. Clemson is undoubtedly probably the team that has had the most success in that area in recent years on a consistent basis. So I do think that this is probably him, you know, throwing a brushback pitch a little bit and saying like, hey, you know, there are teams out there doing this, but to your larger point there, I've been rewatching The Wire all in the game. You know, it's the game of recruiting. Sometimes, you know, while Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, these schools all have great things to tout about themselves in each unique and different ways. At the end of the day, sometimes you got to sling mud too. And I think Clemson is certainly doing that and has done so. And I, if you're a Clemson standpoint, you know, it's pretty easy and pretty easy to sell. Hey, you know, you go play in the SEC at a place like Georgia, Alabama, LSU. It's not guaranteed you get to the SEC title game and they're just playing for a conference title. Whereas, you know, Clemson, you win 12 games a year in the regular season, cakewalk to the ACC title game. You're in a college football playoff. You're in those big games with those big eyeballs. So I certainly understand where they're coming from. And if you're Georgia, you have to sort of do everything you can to prevent them from essentially becoming another Alabama and, you know, getting it to where they're at a place where they're just able to literally pick and select the best players in the country that want to come play for them.
I think that's true. Connor, good stuff. Thanks for being here. We'll see you this afternoon, 3 p.m., for our Cover 4 broadcast. You, me, Mike Griffith, Jeff Sintel, and a whole lot of fun. Last week, great surprise as Solomon Kinley joined us. You never know what you're going to see when you tune into a Cover 4 broadcast on Thursday afternoon. So we'll look forward to speaking to you then, Connor.
Yep. Thanks for having me on, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Nice, fun conversation with Connor Riley there. Enjoyed that. Glad to have you part of it with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. And, of course, don't forget, the same way we're doing podcast and radio here every day, we're also available for you on video every morning at 10 a.m. It's not the normal show necessarily, although it's getting more and more normal. Our team, Michael Carvel, our producer, everyone working so hard to make all of this as seamless and effortless in terms of delivering the content we're used to delivering, and I really appreciate that. Very thankful for that. And of course, you can be a part of our R.S. Andrews cool down on there every single day. That means you can share comments, debate with other Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers, talk to me. I love the interaction you're able to have there. Throughout this sort of lockdown process, my sanity has been maintained by my ability to keep communicating with, you know, the folks around Dog Nation, UGA fans, is a part of our show every day. The R.S. Andrews Cooldown makes that possible. And something else that R.S. Andrews can do for you, they can make possible nice, cool air in your home throughout the spring and summer. You better believe R.S. Andrews can take care of you in that regard. Air conditioning systems are on probably right now. It's been warm, and throughout the rest of the spring and summer, they're going to essentially be on every single day. And if you're worried about yours making its way through the warm weather season to come, well, R.S. Andrews can take that worry off your plate because they can get your system back to factory fresh specs. It just costs $99 to get what they call the smiley tune-up, because story after story, R.S. Andrews have been delivering smiles. So make sure you check them out online at rsandrews.com and check us out online each morning for now on video, Facebook, and YouTube as a part of our R.S. Andrews cooldown. Okay, let me talk about this story for a moment. involving the Florida Gators. This is odd. I hope I have all the details on this right. There's a guy named Luke Ankrum, former Florida defensive lineman. I guess Ankrum was a little frustrated. You know, he didn't make an NFL roster as a non-drafted free agent. And so he was expressing some frustration on Twitter. And one of the things that he said in a since-deleted tweet, now, it's not even the tweet itself that's deleted. I'm pretty sure if I've seen this correctly, Ankrum has completely deleted his Twitter account now, which you kind of hate when you see that happen, you know. Clearly he's dealing with some frustration now, but Ankrum, a tweet that he sent out that got some attention is that he said that Florida offensive line coach and co-offensive coordinator John Hevesy had told him that he would be in prison eventually. And basically, Ankrum said this is a part of a series of tweets where he said that the average recruit doesn't know what really goes on behind the scenes and had some not pleasant things to say about Hevesy. As you might imagine, Florida fans weren't too happy about that. And somehow, some way, this has ended up with, I guess, Ankrum no longer having a Twitter account. It's kind of an ugly deal here. You know, my thing is, I make fun of coaches all the time. I don't typically like taking jabs at players, even Florida players, as a Gator hater even. That's just not my thing to do necessarily. So there's a degree to which I'm going to, you know, not be too hard on Ankrum here, even though, you know, clearly this is kind of an unhinged series of tweets. But man, ugly stuff for Florida on social media. This week, whether it be the Florida staffer trolling a Tennessee commit and then having the Tennessee guy kind of fire back at him, having Ankrum say this about Hevesy, because Hevesy's been with Mullen for a long time, and I think it should be clear to know that if a Florida coach told a Florida player that he thought he would be in prison one day, that's not a very pleasant thing to have come public. So kind of an ugly situation there in Florida. I try to be classy about it, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least a little bit entertained by all this. Moving on, not as entertained by this. Tennessee's doing pretty well in recruiting, y'all. You got to give them a little bit of credit here. I think they're, what, already, am I right about this, fifth in the 24/7 sports composite? That after getting Dylan Brooks the other day, five-star pass rusher out of the state of Alabama. And then you got, as I mentioned, Kamara Wilcoxon, former Florida commit of safety, has committed to Tennessee. And then by the time you hear this show, I think there's a very good chance, at least based on the online chatter anyway, that Terrence Lewis, a five-star linebacker from Hollywood, Florida, is also going to pledge to the Tennessee Vols there as well. And, I mean, listen, we knew that Jeremy Pruitt was a good recruiter. Really, on the field, they probably played better last year sooner than we expected them to. It's been the exact opposite for Tennessee of what I assumed. I thought they'd have a lot of recruiting momentum and very slow on-field momentum. The truth is they probably played better on the field, especially in the second half last season, than their recruiting efforts had been up to this point in time. But even before this year, there had been some recruiting wins, especially along the offensive line. Darnell Wright, Wanya Morris come to as an example there. But the 2021 class has been quite a statement from Jeremy Pruitt. He is just simply a better recruiter than Dan Mullen. So ultimately, what's going on at Tennessee is not a factor for Georgia. The truth is, you know, Georgia's not really all that big into Lewis and Brooks and guys like that anyway. Georgia's got a different list of five-star guys that it's working on, so Tennessee's not really taking something off of Georgia's table necessarily. But if I'm a Florida program, and I say this all the time, I know it kind of comes across as, you know, propaganda, I guess, and I don't mean for it to, nor do I think it should be taken that way. But I say all the time, for Florida fans who think they're closing the gap on Georgia, the point that I would make is, and the thing that I would tell you to watch closely and pay very close attention to is, while you're trying to close the gap on Georgia, you better be minding who it is that's trying to close the gap on you. And as of now, Tennessee is just collecting recruiting wins at a rate in which Florida cannot match. Does that mean that Tennessee goes out and beats Florida on the field this year? Well, obviously, these players are not going to be on the field this year. These are 2021 signees. But I'd be watching it closely. I really would. I think that there's a chance that on the field, maybe Tennessee takes a bit of a step back this year compared to where some people think they might go. But if I was a Florida fan, I'd be paying close attention. Here's something else that I hope Florida fans are paying attention to. Gator Hater Updater 1,277 days. That's big news. And speaking of big news, make sure you get your Atlanta news now at AJC.com. Follow everything going on in your state. It's AJC.com. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.